Welcome to the Foolishness and Idiocy Commentary. This is ONGC recording, and it is 3:41 p.m. and that is Central Time, and today is August 29th. There's lots to talk about today. There was a big court case concerning Grayscale and their protest that the SEC has shot them down for turning the investment trust or closed-end fund that they have into an ETF, and that was struck down. So that's improving the potential that we will have spot-priced Bitcoin ETFs, and the SEC is also expecting to, or at least the market is expecting the SEC to make a decision before the Labor Day holiday on whether they're going to push the decision on allowing more companies to, or I guess any company for that matter, to create a spot-priced Bitcoin ETF, or whether they're going to just kick it down the line even further or ask for additional conditions. But with Grayscale's success, Bitcoin was up in a very dynamic manner in here today, so that's really quite positive. Then in China, we had additional measures to try and instill some confidence. I think it's increasingly likely that we're heading towards a we'll do whatever it takes type of statement coming from the Chinese administration. They're not there quite yet, but the depth of the issues are so large that in order to or if they were to just simply let it go, well, we're talking about a crash of monumental proportions, potentially similar to the global financial crisis for its impact on global trade. So I just don't believe that the Chinese administration are willing to take that particular risk. I think it's more likely that it could be something akin to the Japanese experience. And that they will just simply continue pushing the can down the road. And that it might take an extraordinarily long time to de-lever. And that, and let's just think about the fact that Japan's GDP per capita peaked about 20 years ago at about 44,000. And then it has declined by about 10,000 over the course of the last 15, 20 years. But it's still very high, and there's no question that Japan is a wealthy country. Now, China, by virtue of the fact that it has such a large population, is very unlikely to get to those levels of GDP per capita. But the rise in GDP per capita over the course of the last 40 years has been nothing short of spectacular. And there's it's quite possible that it might just simply stagnate and go sideways or down over the course of the next several decades as they unwind the over-leverage that they have within the property sector. So that's certainly something that is worth thinking about in terms of the price action. And then we have the dollar, which is starting to roll over here, and that is a clear potential support for both gold and silver and the other precious metals. It also helps to, I think, further highlight the fact that what we have right now is a very clear correlation between stock market activity and bond market activity. And historically, it's been an inverse correlation. So, what's bad news, at least for the moment, what's bad news for the economy is actually good news for stocks because there is the assumption that it's inevitable that interest rates will come down and that there won't be any particular problem for company earnings. But we are at the end of the earnings cycle, and it's been pretty much as expected. Earnings have fallen by about 6%. But that was largely priced in over the course of the last several months, so it hasn't been a surprise. But earnings are starting to come back down. Now, let's look at some charts here. So, Bitcoin is firming from the 26,000 level, and that's the region of the 200-day moving average. And it's also happening to be pretty much right in line with the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Now, I'm of the opinion that if they do permission a Bitcoin spot ETF, what and that is basically going to do is hoover up available supply. So in order to raise the funds to create those ETFs, they'd have to go into the market and buy Bitcoin. And Bitcoin's an inelastic asset. So then you're going to have some interest in Bitcoin miners like Riot Platforms. Now that popped on the upside amid the initial enthusiasm around the potential for a Bitcoin ETF. Then it came straight back down again as some of the enthusiasm waned. And now it's starting to jump again, and this time from the upper side of the base formation and the region of the 200-day moving average. So I initiated a long position in here again. I think on this occasion, I might be a bit more disciplined on when to take profits. And then Coinbase is firming now from the region of the 200-day moving average and the upper side of its base formation. Now, Coinbase is a Bitcoin exchange. And the one thing I like about Coinbase more than anything else is that the management seem to be quite mature in that they have so far avoided the temptation to launch their own token. And by doing that, the company has survived. And what we've seen with other Bitcoin or cryptocurrency exchanges is that they go for the money first, which is to create their own token and then use that token as a medium of exchange for people to invest in other alternative coins. But the problem, of course, is that because then the fate of the company is then tied into that token they've created, and then because of money laundering rules, because of know your customer rules, because of leverage, and then because usually what happens is that the companies create their own token and then start using it as a credit facility. Then leverage creeps in, and it's usually enough to completely destroy the exchange. And we've seen that on several occasions. And then what we've also seen just recently is that Binance exited the US market for specifically that reason, that they were having issues with explaining where all the money that's been going into their Binance coin has been coming from. But the net result of that is that Coinbase is now the only US exchange with the size necessary to provide clearing for an ETF on spot priced basis. So the share is now steadying, and it could be one of the major beneficiaries of a spot price ETF. Now let's turn our attention to the precious metal markets. So gold has steadied now from the region of the $1,900 area and the region of the 200-day moving average, and it needed to find support here, and it has done so. So this is a reasonably impressive upper dynamic for two consecutive weeks now, actually, and it's been a reasonable consolidation in the region of the upper side of this 3-year range. The times when gold does best are when the trend of real interest rates is going down, and then also when the dollar is going down. So let's pay attention to both of those characteristics. And I do need to up the right chart for the dollar. There have been two occasions this year when the dollar has encountered resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average, and this is potentially the third. And it was down today. Now, if it follows through on the downside tomorrow, that would break the 6-week uptrend, and it would increase the potential that the dollar index will then subsequently go back down and test the 100 level, or potentially exceed at the 100 level and extend the downtrend even further. When we look at the dollar over the long term, I think it's very important to think about the long-term cycle. And I believe that I've annotated the monthly chart. And we can see that there have been some 7-year up and down trends. And the last one has been 8 years. So it's now starting to come back down. And if the longer term cyclical nature of the dollar is sustained, well, what we're going to see then is a 7-year period of underperformance. And that could take us to new reaction lows. And it would represent a profound period of underperformance by the US dollar. Now, that's a potential outcome, and if that were to occur, it would mean that the preeminence of Wall Street relative to every other asset class would end. Now, there's a lot of betting going on right now about the massive underperformance of commodities relative to Wall Street, the massive underperformance of value relative to growth. And then also the massive underperformance of ex-US relative to US. But there is another way to frame all of that. It would be the underperform considering that the number one best performing asset class over the course of the last decade has been US tech companies. And the Nasdaq was up 300 points in here today, so that's a really quite impressive rebound, and it has now taken out the downdraft that we had last week. So, if we're going to see additional unwinding of the overextension relative to the trend mean, then it would now require a very clear additional downward dynamic. And then, when we look at the performance of the Fangman companies, the real mega caps. It's still now at still close to a new all-time high, and that's a big rebound we've seen over just the last couple of sessions. So, on a relative basis, it is the large cap companies are really pushing ahead in here. Now, if the dollar is going to roll over, then the relative performance of those large companies and the preeminence of the US market could potentially become under threat. But it's really when we look at those ratios where we see this massive undervaluation of lots of different asset classes relative to US or growth, it's really the other way of thinking about it is that we have this massive overvaluation of the large cap mega cap companies relative to commodities, relative to value, or then relative to ex-US markets. So, as the dollar does roll over or potentially rolls over, then it's going to enhance the outlook for ex-US markets, but it will also enhance the outlook for the value sector and for the commodity sector. And of course, that is where a lot of those ratios are being looked at. They're being looked at from an undervaluation perspective. I think it is more likely that what we're really seeing is that all those ratios at exceptionally low levels are the better way of thinking about it is that it's not so much that we have a clear undervaluation of other asset classes, but rather that there's a massive overvaluation of the tech companies or the mega cap companies. But it's not like they don't have the financial heft to power through. And Nvidia, for example, is still steady in the region of the peaks. And the succession of higher reaction lows is intact, and it's continuing to hold at the $400 level. So as long as it's doing that, I think the benefit of the doubt is going to continue to be given to the upside. It's very likely that when Tesla releases or starts delivering the Cybertruck, that it's probably going to be a hit sales phenomenon for the company. And the share is beginning to reflect that, and it's bouncing from the region of the 200-day moving average. So that's a really quite benign story. Then Google is at least steady here and is pushing on to new recovery highs. So that is also supportive of the view that there is demand for advertising out there. Now, Meta was looking a little tired last week, but it is now also starting to steady in here. So then I saw an article today talking about Amazon and how much they refinanced their debt and took out more debt during the pandemic at exceptionally low levels. So they're making money off the money that they borrowed. And that's just good corporate treasury activity. And the share is still holding the sequence of higher reaction lows. And it's looking quite likely now that the 200-day moving average is going to cross back up above the 1,000-day moving average. And that would also be at least contributing to a more bullish outlook overall. Now let's turn our attention to what's happening in China. The CSI 300 is steadying, and it's looking increasingly likely that they're going to provide additional stimulus. Now, I don't think that the go-go years of property development are going to be repeated, but China will still need to produce cars. They're still investing a great deal of money in railways, so it's not like the demand is going to evaporate, but rather that the demand growth is going to moderate or potentially disappear, and that we're going to see that that the demand peak in nominal terms is probably upon us. Well, that alone is something that could have a serious knock-on effect for the global economy, and particularly the supply of commodities. But if we do see additional stimulus, it's going to improve sentiment. And the mainland market is steadying. And then the H-share index in Hong Kong is also steadying here and bouncing from the 6,000 level. I'm contemplating whether I should be taking a position here, considering that we are very close to the lows and the likelihood is improving that stimulus will be eventually provided. And I think that is what's being priced into Chinese markets right now. Of course, it's going to have to be finely calibrated, and there is a lot of debate about which local governments are going to be bailed out. And what kind of concessions would be wrung from them in order for them to be given the money that they require to balance their budgets? So there might have to be a lot of firings. There might be a lot of public sector employees that are let go. These are all going to be potential outcomes for some of the most indebted of the regional governments in China. But certainly, if they supply the market with additional liquidity, we have to remember that capital is both global and mobile. And if China comes out with a $1 trillion stimulus, which would be, I guess, around 7.8 or 8 trillion renminbi, then that would certainly help to support asset prices around the world. So that could happen at a very propitious time, considering that the USA is looking down the barrel of some significant tightening. Not only are we seeing that bond yields are high and that interest rates are likely to stay high, and the Federal Reserve is on the cusp of making a mistake in being a little bit too stubborn in terms of holding rates higher, but yields are starting to come back down. If we see downside follow through tomorrow, most particularly an extension of this decline below the 4% level, it's going to look like a failed upside break. And that would hold out the potential that it will come right back down and test the lower side of the range around 3.5%. Now that I think we have to at least be prepared for the potential that we're going to experience deflationary pressures. Now, then it really will be a question of how much stimulus is China going to create. US consumers are under stress, and the number of ads I've heard on the radio over just the last couple of weeks where they're advertising debt reconciliation, that's our debt consolidation. refinancing. These kinds of ads are appearing at an increasingly large are on an increasingly large frequency. There are going to be 40 million people are going to start making repayments on student loans in October. And that's really not all that far away. That's going to siphon money out of the system. And if people are spending a couple of $100, $300 or $400 a month, maybe, and then, well, how much are they going to be spending on subscriptions or services or deliveries or indeed on going out or restaurants or buying a new car? Those are all the kinds of decisions people will be making. Of course, there are lots of people that do not have to pay back their student loans. They already own their homes, or they have bought homes with fixed rate mortgages at rates that are substantially below where the prevailing rate is today. And what this also helps to really is going to exacerbate is the generation war, because young people are those with student loans, and they are also renters. So they've been hit left and right, whereas older people have not. And I think this is a problem that we see in lots of different countries. Now, that's also most particularly true in the UK. So the 10-year gilt is beginning to steady here, and the yield is around 4.4%. And if we see downside follow-through here, well, this will also look like a failed upside break. And then there's at least the potential that some of the, for example, if you're talking about Greater London and then introducing the low emissions zone into the Greater London area, that's going to be a significant revenue boost for the local governments. It's also going to siphon money out of consumers' pockets. It's going to create a great deal of ill feeling among the electorate, and obviously not going to be great news for the current mayor of London. But less inflation, higher interest rates, that's positive for the banking sector, and the banks are beginning to steady. And the European banks are also steadying in here, and European banks have been a relative strength performer overall. Then I think it's also important to just look at how Europe is performing relative to the news coming out of China. So the DAX index is right in the region of its all-time peak, and it is firming from the region of the 200-day moving average. And many of these companies are big exporters, and a lot of, well, I guess China is a major trade partner of Germany. So and particularly for the industrial sector. So if China's economy is going to get stimulated, that will be beneficial for several of the European markets. And with recession threats in much of Europe, then it's a big question, how committed can the ECB be to its hiking and quantitative tightening policy? The FTSE MIB in Italy, it continues to steady here. And this is a very impressive rebound, which has completed the significant type 3 base formation. So it does look increasingly likely that several of the European markets are in a much better position to outperform here. But of course, what this is also helps to reflect is the capacity of ex-US markets to outperform in an environment where the dollar is weakening. And that outperformance would accelerate if the dollar starts to trend downwards. Then let's think about some of the major commodity exporters. And of course, Australia is a major iron ore exporter as well as a major natural gas exporter. Now, there was strike action announced on some of those LNG exports, and there's a lot of angst within Australia about the wisdom of exporting coal. But iron ore prices are still really quite steady, and the ASX 200 has been ranging here for most of the last year. Now, over the course of the last 2.5 years, we have an inverse head and shoulders pattern. And as long as this sequence of higher reaction lows remains intact, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Now, if China does go ahead and stimulate, well, Australia would be one of the key beneficiaries, and it would be really quite likely that the ASX 200 will break on the upside and quite handily exceed the 8,000 level in pretty short order. And that's, I think, equally true for New Zealand. So the New Zealand market has been largely range bound for the last 2 years, having been a real clear global outperformer between 2013 and 2021. The index hasn't really been going anywhere, but it is now starting to steady from the region of that 1,000-day moving average. And of course, it's also worth considering that when we look at markets like this, it's important to also look at them on a constant currency basis to highlight just how much of a pullback New Zealand had as the New Zealand dollar depreciated. So it is really just beginning to find support following a significant period of underperformance. Mexico remains the market most likely to benefit from nearshoring, and the iShares MSCI Mexico ETF continues to trend higher here and has held its sequence of higher reaction lows. And a lot of that outperformance has been because of the currency, and the Mexican peso has been just a tower of strength against the US dollar. This is one of the longest periods of outperformance by the peso in an awfully long time. And then India, as a counterbalance to China, with a massive, large, young population, it's also steadying here. And that, of course, is in US dollar terms. When we look at it in local currency terms, it is still holding the breakout to new all-time high, despite the fact that it's been consolidating for the last 6 weeks. But India, over the long term, is likely to be a major beneficiary, both of necessary offshoring from China. And I think that drawing some parallels between China and Japan is probably a worthwhile experience. When the cost of labor in Japan started to rise, then they started moving some of their factories overseas. And that's already happening in China. Then they also went overseas and they bought up the basic resources. And that's exactly what China has done. Now, Japan, because of the trend of governance and the willingness to adapt, was able to circumvent the middle income trap. And that is the big question for China. Will they be able to circumvent the middle income trap? Will they be able to reform and liberalize? Will they be able to harness the productive capacity of the population and also not just the productive capacity, but the creative capacity of the population? I think that is something that it tends to be ignored when we talk about the productive capacity of any country. It's not just about creating graduates, and it's not just about building roads. It's about fostering the spark of innovation and creativity and allowing people the opportunity to express their creative instinct. And that's one of the big challenges that a totalitarian regime has, because you need to be able to foster creativity, but creativity is always going to be about thinking about how to do things differently and new. And it will inevitably bump up against the authority of the administration. And it's by testing ideas that you can really grow a creative culture. And that's just not possible within an authoritarian environment. So is China going to be able to break that mold? I think it's a very big question. India has got this chaotic, freewheeling environment. And then, of course, legendary bureaucracy within the administration. But it has successfully birthed several independent companies that have thrived regardless of whether they've been encumbered or supported by their own government. And those companies are standing the test of time, whether we're thinking about Tata Motors or Tata Consultancy. Those have been incredible success stories. And then we have incredible success within the generic drugs system as well. But I think these are important questions. I do realize I've been chatting for a while, so I will leave it at that and wish all the best to all of you.